Welcome to Top Advisor Marketing, where you will learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your practice. Brought to you by Top Advisor Podcasting, a done-for-you podcasting solution built just for trusted advisors. And now, your co-hosts of Top Advisor Marketing, Kirk Lowe and Matt Halloran.
Hello and welcome to another Top Advisor Marketing Podcast. My name is Matt Halloran, and today we're doing podcast episode number 40. Kirk and I are interviewing Lauren Williams, four-time Olympian and three-time Olympic medal winner. And we just found out this morning she is the first woman in American history who has won a medal in the Summer and Winter Olympics. And she is a financial planner and the founder of her own financial services firm called Worth Winning. Lauren, welcome to the podcast.
It is so good to be here.
Well, it is so good to have somebody who is doing things right. So let's jump right in. How did you come up with this whole Worth Winning idea?
So Worth Winning was born because as a professional athlete, I did not get the services that I was looking for. I was 20 years old. I was making over $200,000 a year. I went and I tried to find a financial advisor because I knew that that was an area that I didn't know anything about and that my family didn't know anything about. So I hired a guy and he didn't serve my needs in the way that I was hoping my needs would be served. And so I started to get financial education. I hired another guy. That also went poorly. And I was like, I've got to do something to be the change and fill the gap in the industry that I'm seeing and the services that I was looking for as a professional athlete.
So everybody needs to go to worth-winning.com, which is her website. And when you see this page come up, it is set up exactly how Kirk and I have talked about wanting all of you to set websites up. She's got high quality professional pictures that make you feel like you already get to know her. And I want to now talk about the video. So Kirk, when you watched the video, what were the first things that really popped out for you when you were watching her video on her webpage?
Well, I mean, Lauren kind of blessed with being a happy, charismatic person. And so that she's got that going for her, just good listening to her. So that's good. But not every advisor has that. So you got to work with what God gave you, right?
And every advisor has that. You just don't look so grumpy.
Yeah. Well, that's good system for sure.
That's fantastic.
But Lauren, you speak to your convictions and you speak about the client. You don't speak about all the stuff you're good at. And a lot of advisors really struggle because they feel like it's a brochure. It's an opportunity to, you know, tell everybody who they are, what they do, who they help, and, you know, all those kinds of things. But you dive right into, you know, what's going on, what happened in your world, why it's important for people to understand you, how you operate on their in their terms. So it was all about the client. And it was very emotionally engaging, which is really the main point of a video. I mean, a video is not the best way to give somebody all the details. A video is the best way to emotionally engage somebody. And you did that, you know, wonderfully. So, and I think my thumbs up ratio for a video is probably less than 1 out of 10. So good job.
I am winning at life. That's it. Yes.
So let's talk about the idea behind the video. The video itself is not shot like a lot of other people would have shot it because you have animation. What made you make the decision to have it be a little bit more cartoonish than stuffy?
Well, my target market is millennials, professional athletes. They like, you know, young and fun. They have the technology in their hand all the time. And so I wanted to be able to cater to my audience. It's cartoon is not so childish that they wouldn't engage with it, but they love looking at the videos. Mm-hmm. So that was part of the idea behind it. But the other thing was to get a videographer, to get someone to shoot it, to, you know, find someone that was going to be of good quality. I actually even tried to hire a videographer for some other stuff before this video, and it just went very poor. And then price wise as a solo practitioner, it wasn't going to be cost effective. So my video is the best kept secret, $180.
Holy Moses.
There.
Okay, we're going to have to talk about that offline, Lauren, all right? So
you know what, Lauren, it's very hard for advisors, for anybody to pull off a live action video. It's just you got to have the perfect crew, you got to really know them so that they can get the best out of you, and you got to be able to pull it off. And you got to really, really know your stuff, because if you're reading, you're done. As soon as you're reading a teleprompter, in my opinion, you're done. I mean, the president of the United States, well, anyway, we'll talk about Barack. Let's talk about Barack Obama. He was incredible. You couldn't ever tell he was reading. If he ever was, I don't even know. But that takes a lot of work and charisma to pull off. So
anyway. Yeah, it was really important to me to look at it from a standpoint of, like I said, what do I want to put out there? And the video, like I said, on a solo practitioner's budget, the video crew that I hired, it wasn't good quality. It didn't speak. Like you said, I was very robotic sounding. And it's like, this is not what I want to do, but I still need to get this message out. So you've got to be creative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you lead with your brand leads with conviction.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't go wrong with that. You never. So, you know, that's a great lesson for everybody today. It's one of the big reasons we've got you on, asked you to come on our show today, is just to let people learn from some of the really great things that you've done here. Plus, worth winning. Mm-hmm. If I want to examine, like I love examining taglines, company names, because I've been naming them for so long. This is up there with one of my favorites. And I wish I could claim it, but I can't. So, but worth, just think, I mean, all the tie-ins. I want to just go through something. I shared this a couple podcasts ago where I have something called the validity test when you're building a brand. And there are 9 variables. So clear and simple. Did it pass that test? Absolutely. Is it relevant? Worth is a financial word. It's also meaningful to just, you know, life and wisdom, that kind of stuff. Is it something worth doing? Winning clearly represents what you do, what you've done in your life as an athlete. So all kinds of relevancy there. Is it memorable? Absolutely. Is it differentiating? Right. I think it's absolutely differentiating because it tells your story, and there's not a lot of financial advisors who are going to have your story. So easy to communicate. Absolutely. Flexible and portable. The idea that worth and winning have so many different things you can play off of makes it incredibly flexible. Portable means if somebody were to buy your business down the road, Lauren, they could use it because it's not just about you. It doesn't have to just be your winning athletic story behind it. It could be winning life, which is probably more your point than your winning, because I can tell you're humble, especially from some of the stuff that Matt shared with me in your meeting with him last week. So, you know, flexible and portable are really huge. And the next one is it's believable, persuasive, and it's very intriguing. So, man, you passed my validity test for a brand with flying colors. So great job there.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I put a lot of thought into what was this thing? What do I really want to say to people? And I think when you put a lot of thought into it, and like you said, you lead with conviction, you come up with something awesome.
Well, let's talk about using that brand, because you specifically target 2 markets, right? Athletes and then millennials. And our audience is struggling with marketing to both of them. You know, most of the average age of a financial advisor is what, like 58 now, and they don't communicate well with younger people. In fact, I hear this all the time from the older advisors that I've worked with. You know, Matt, I just don't get them. And I'm like, well, you know what? Your parents didn't get you either, dude. So, you know, whatever. But you are successful with that. And there's a couple of highlights that I want to highlight and pull from what you've done. But how are you getting in front of these 2 different target markets with your brand?
So with millennials, I'm focusing on, you know, the places that millennials are. Coming up here in the next month or so, I have a presentation to a bunch of millennial females that have joined like a group because they want to hang out together. It's kind of like a meetup, but they pay like an active membership to hang out, learn, grow, etc. And so I'm just doing like a money 101 talk for that group. Another thing that's been drawing millennials in is student loans. That's a real pain point for this age group. And being able to market yourself as a person as a student loan expert is something else that's been drawing millennials in. But I'm there. I'm present on social media. I'm constant and I'm consistent with it. And I think that is something too that is making people say, oh, okay, she's here. She's available. Like, oh, that definitely rings true to me. And people feel comfortable reaching out.
Mm-hmm. Kirk and I were doing an analysis just like he did with the brand analysis that he just did with you. And I'm the social media guy for the company. And so I was looking at the frequency of posting, what you were posting, where you were posting, and you're posting enough to look present, right? Because you are present, but you're not posting so much that you get noisy, right? How did you find that balance?
I think that's a natural personality thing for me. I prefer not to be on social media at all if it was up to me. That is one part of my millennial genes that is lacking, but I know also how important it is. And so for me, it was really important, like you said, to be present and be consistent, but not to be overwhelming, because I didn't want to overwhelm myself with constant posts. And you got to think of that content. You got to create it, and it has to be good. You can't just throw something out there every day because you you need to be saying something that matters. It's quality over quantity, basically.
And your social posts, they're not salesy. right? So they're personal enough where people feel a connection with you, but they're not too personal, right? Because you can swing the pendulum that way. Or what a lot of advisors will do is all they will talk about is financial planning issues. And you have a good balance with that too. Is that just another personality thing, that that's how you like to run your life?
Yeah, I think that it's really important to, like you said, have balance all over the place. So I'm a person, I am a financial planner, I'm a former athlete, you know, I'm into healthy cooking, etc. And so to show all aspects of who you are, I think, is the thing that a millennial and a professional athlete can most connect with, because what they're looking for is someone they can trust, that not someone that's selling them something. So I've gone out of my way, because I know how it feels to me when someone comes to me with something salesy. I actually ran into an insurance guy the other day that I explained I was a financial planner, and he still thought he could sell me insurance. And so he was so salesy.
Wow.
I know how it makes my skin crawl. And so I would never want to put a prospective client or even just a regular person in that position. Mm-hmm. So I'm very careful to be thinking that through when I'm thinking about what I'm going to do next.
When you're positioning yourself to millennials in the video specifically, you also talk about convenience. And you said it at the beginning of our podcast today that, you know, they're always carrying their devices around, and you have added a component to your business that allows for massive convenience. Can you share that with our audience?
Yeah, I run my company virtually. Even my clients that live in Dallas don't want to meet me in person. So anywhere that my computer is, I can work with my clients. And that's what the big thing and the big draw, I think, has been for a lot of millennials. I had two people ask me if I could meet in person. I said, sure, if you'd like to meet in person, that'd be great. And then they're kind of like, eh, on second thought, no thanks. And I, you know, just did a panel a week ago for a group of older planners. And I pulled out my computer, I pulled out my microphone, my portable scanner, and my cell phone. And I said, I've got everything I need right here. I can operate full business.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just kind of baffled. They're like, well, you have a scanner in your bag? And it was smaller than my computer, actually. They're like, how does this work? But yeah, really using the technology that's available, even the softwares that I use to help them with budgeting. We want everything at our fingertips. And I don't see a reason that you can't run a firm like that in this day and age.
Kirk, where's your brain at right now?
It's all over the place because you're doing so many things right. I mean, Lauren, when you mentioned that you put yourself in your client's shoes, I mean, there's a lot of advisors over the years who have paid a lot of coaches and a lot of consultants a lot of money to hear that. And I think so few of them are able to actually do it well. And it's how you approach it from the beginning. So that's an advantage for you, feeling them, like how they feel about what you're doing and not wanting to be salesy. And I know sometimes people say millennials, you can't sell to them that way. It's all about friendships and connections and value. I think most people are like that. I think maybe this just maybe slightly more, or maybe it's just more talked about because people are finally starting to realize you can't sell. And your story about the insurance guy, even after realizing your financial advisor trying to sell you insurance is comical. Anyway, maybe that person is just desperate for a sale, which is most likely the case. But anyway, I mean, when I say things like this, Matt and I work with a ton of incredible financial professionals, so we're not beating those guys up, but we do hear a lot of stories and I do get lots of calls from people to the contrary. So I mean, that's a huge thing. You know, socially, we talk about quality over quantity all the time. It's huge. And advisors feel so overwhelmed with social media and your instinct to say, you know what, I just want to do this so I can actually sustain it and feel like I'm being authentic. You know, two more, you know, bells going off there, because that's the perfect way to set up TF social media is you have to, and you have to speak with conviction when you decide you're going to do it. Don't overwhelm them. Don't overwhelm yourself. Keep it simple. Talk about things that you're interested in, what your clients are interested in, and don't make it all about trying to sell them by sending them, you know, hey, we should meet for a coffee, or hey, we should, you know, want to compliment you, no obligation, consultation, that kind of stuff. So,
you know,
one of the things I'll say too that's helped me a lot is not comparing myself to others. You know, as I said, I'm naturally competitive, and so I wanted to learn everything I could about what the other advisors are doing. I've got a really good mastermind group of other young planners that are doing really well in business. And so for a while I was kind of like, oh, well, Phil does video, I need to do video. Oh, well, Rianca does this on her, you know, and I was back and forth. And I realized that what I started spinning my wheels trying to do what everyone else was doing. Like I said, I don't enjoy being on video. I don't, you know, he does a video pretty much every week, this planner that I'm talking about. That's what's authentic for him. That's what's easy for him. That's what works for him. I can't be anyone other than who I am. And so when something that kind of makes me upset or, you know, there's something I'm super passionate about, then it's nothing for me to cut on the video camera and say, hey, just so you guys know, here's Tip Tuesday. Don't do this, because I don't feel like I'm in front of the camera anymore. I feel like I'm sharing something that's a really important message. Whereas like that guy, he enjoys being on video and talking about everything. You know, I'd rather write a blog. So mm-hmm. being who you are and not comparing yourself to others and trying to do all these different things, because there's 97 kinds of marketing things you can do, but which ones are authentic to your brand?
We even have a presentation. I'm so glad that you're using that word over and over again. We do a presentation called The Authentic Advisor, and Kirk came up with this great idea called MIC, which is My Ideal Client. And you are your ideal client, which is so unbelievably smart. And so many advisors don't do that. They don't look at themselves and say, well, would I like to work with who I am? And if that's the case, why am I not marketing and sharing that stuff with my clients? Now, we have to talk about the elephant in the room. And the elephant in the room, and Kirk and I have dealt with this for the last, you know, 10, 15 years, so many financial planners and financial advisors think that working with professional athletes is this wonderful goal that they should get. You know, if I just landed Allen Iverson, you know, everything would change, or Kobe Bryant or somebody like that. What has your experience been with that, not only just as an athlete, but now as a financial advisor?
It has been really hard to be able to serve professional athletes. And I think I even bought into a little bit of that hype early on. Is like, I'm a professional athlete. I had great integrity during my career. You know, I've got a pretty good brand. People know me. I went to school with a lot of NFL players, and yada, 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 on and on and on. So this is going to be easy for me. It has been anything but easy for me. And one of the things I neglected to take into account was the culture of professional athletes. The reason I started the business is because, like you said, I had two advisors that didn't do a good job for me, mm-hmm. and countless friends that were taken advantage of, or, you know, didn't get the information that they needed. But because of that, there's a culture around professional sports where, you know, it takes you a lot longer to earn the trust of someone that's going to be handling your money than it would in a typical financial advisor, you know, client relationship. And in general, like, for instance, my millennials are reaching out to me because they want help with their money. Athletes have people that are flocking to them, always trying to, you know, convince them to get this or get that. And so you become just like everyone else whenever you say, hey, I started this business and, you know, I think you could really benefit from it. No matter what your unpitchy pitch is, mm-hmm. if you're asking them to pay you for a service, they are immediately on the defensive and you become just one of them. It was kind of like, hey, Lauren, have you gone over to the dark side? Like, gosh, you're a really nice person. I like you a lot. Like, you see this kind of like thing happening in their head. Like, they're not said that out loud directly to me, but you can tell that they kind of tense up and they're like, ooh, mm-hmm. this is one of those financial people. Mm-hmm. I don't know anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't want to talk to her about this. And so the negative money emotions that athletes have, you know, and it, like, even if they have some personally, there is some industry-wide because of the way that other athletes have been taken advantage of that creates this barrier, which makes it really hard to get that entryway. It's also been really hard connecting with the agents. You know, we found out on the NFL, MLB level that there's some side deals going on. And, you know, I'm not interested in that kind of world. I'm not going to be at the combine with a Bentley and taking the potential client to a steak dinner and, mm-hmm. you know, smooching the agent. Like, that's not how I want to do business. Mm-hmm. And so that's immediately closed off some doors as well. So it's like, how do I best show, like you said, continue to be authentic, but to get in front of this group and to, you know, be able to close these clients and do a good job for them, because they deserve better than the salesy people that they are ending up with.
So all in all, you know, I would say that you're doing so much right that you should be held out as an example of a financial services professional who really communicates their brand effectively, has a consistent brand message, has a consistent niche audience, and you're not looking for easy slam dunks. And I want to kind of go there, but this is one of the reasons financial advisors are also staying away from millennials, is because they want to work with the easy 401k rollovers at the end of their, you know, career, 55, 60 years old, retirement income planning. You talked about student loans. What are some of the other things that you found as good connections from a marketing perspective, or what your millennial clients would want from an advisor?
Budgeting has been a big sell for me. It is the thing that is the most purchased package that I'm like doing right now. So budgeting, is something that like everyone needs to conquer. And it's the foundations of financial planning. Mm-hmm. Most advisors think of, you know, I need to, like you said, get the client's money to invest, or I need to invest the client's money, et cetera. But if you don't have basic principles in place, there's no money to invest, or they're going to be coming back to you, which is frequently the story I heard with a lot of professional athletes is they gave money to an advisor. They didn't have any financial literacy. They spent all the other money and then they went back to the advisor and the advisor's like, oh, the money's tied up. And then they were like, oh, you know, stole my money, all that kind of stuff. That's where those stories kind of come from. But realizing what people need. So I have student loan packages. I have budgeting packages. You know, you call and you say, you know, this is the particular thing that I'm dealing with and I'd like some help with it. I say, okay, well, you know, we can work on something hourly if you prefer. So really being able to customize your services to what is going to best suit that person is really important for millennials. And I think I've done a good job of figuring out that, like you said, it's not one size fits all. Mm-hmm. And there are many things outside of the investment advice world and even the traditional financial planning, you know, with the estate planning, insurance, et cetera, that millennials are looking for. First time home purchase, first time car purchase. They don't understand what the 401k is in the first place. Mm-hmm. So sometimes they just need someone to sit and talk to them and explain, you know, what the concepts of these different things. And they're willing to learn. They're eager to learn. They're coachable. And I think that's one of the things we get a bad rap for is like, oh, they don't want to know anything, or they're terrible with money. And, you know, as soon as I say in front of other advisors or even just other boomers, you know, I help millennials organize their finances, they, I get a big laugh. Mm-hmm. And like, oh, my God, they so need it. This is the best thing you could have ever come up with. And it's always kind of like a condescending, joking, millennials are so bad. But really, millennials are excited to learn more. They just don't have the information. And, you know, we got to blame our boomer parents for not giving us the information.
That's right. Yeah.
Instead of those shaking their finger at us.
Absolutely. You have positioned yourself, you know, as that trusted resource, which most of the advisors want to be that trusted resource, but they're too rigid. This is what I do. This is what I offer. This is how I offer it. And that's not how what I'm hearing from you millennials want. They want flexibility. They want convenience. They want choices. I would tell you a very quick story. I was working with this firm down in Indiana, and it was an insurance company, and they were trying to close this very, very large insurance case. And so they presented the case to me, and they presented me with one solution. And I was like, okay, so why are you only presenting one solution? Shouldn't you give this person a choice? And when they gave the person four or five different options, not too many so they were confused, but enough so that they felt empowered to make a decision instead of being sold to, they closed the largest premium. Now, you're talking about doing that obviously in a different way, but with the same philosophy, is you are empowering people to make a choice to work with you instead of doing that hardcore in-your-face sale.
Exactly. I think that by having these options available, you know, you go to a restaurant, you look at the menu, and you choose what best suits your needs at that time. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's a very similar thing, and like the services being provided end up being similar. So you might say, I want student loan package, but in the course of that, if we're talking and, you know, something comes up and I find out you don't have savings, it's not like I'm not going to tell you, oh, you need 3 to 6 months emergency. Like, you get kind of planning light in that process anyway. So you pick the thing that was most important to you, but you still get everything that you need by communicating clearly and by, you know, me being able to take a deeper dive into your situation via whatever service you chose.
Yeah. Kirk, closing thoughts.
Well, one of the things that seems to be a bit of a challenge, I thought I'd give you a couple of quick idea here, Lauren, and a lot of advisors bump up against this challenge all the time, is when you have a good brand and when you identify, and you've got a great one, and when you identify who you work with, so you're really clear about your niche audience and your niche expertise. You just listed all your services, that's your niche expertise, and your niche audience is millennials and professional athletes. So you've done a really good job of communicating that. Sometimes the trigger that, so for your trigger is going through social and connecting with people and being out in the community and drawing people to you. But there's one other way, and you are sharing articles and you know, financial planning thoughts. One thing that could take it a little bit further, a lot of advisors, some they're picking up, the ones that we work with are picking up on this, is something I call proof of expertise or proof of brand or depth of brand. I have all kinds of different words for it. And the idea is that if the athlete is looking at you and they're saying, and you feel like as soon as you start selling the idea or providing a value proposition, as soon as they feel like it's any kind of a proposition, they start closing down. But if you can go one step further from your social commentary, your brand, your social commentary, and your blog posts, and take it one step further with like a white paper or a checklist that start to identify. So if you had a white paper on budgeting, why it's important, all the mistakes people make, and maybe even give them a template how to do it better. And then at the end of it, you say, look, if you want, I can actually do this all for you. And I can give you, you know, hold you accountable to getting it done. And it's, you know, it's this, you know, this amount of money to do that. You have a better, you can hand them that and let that sell for you. So you never have to actually provide a value proposition unless somebody actually asks you for one. So that kind of stuff could take you to that next level. And then finding maybe another way. It sounds like you feel comfortable blogging, which is good because a lot of advisors struggle getting blog posts done. You speak from conviction, so it's easy to find those stories. A lot of times advisors want to try to come up with a product or a solution or something like that, and then it's more difficult to write about because it feels like you're selling all the time. Anyway, so those things are all good. You could look for other ways in a paper or a checklist or something like that. Maybe a neat thing for you to be able to do.
Or you could podcast because you're obviously very, very good. Your voice is awesome. You come across with great energy, and that can just be one more way to communicate. Kirk and I talk a lot all the time that you have to communicate to your clients and prospects in the medium in which they want to be communicated to while they're there, which is a total millennial idea. You need to be omnipresent, ever present, and available. And I think you really, really pull that off. So, Lauren, if you had any words of wisdom for our listeners, what sort of stuff would you pass on to the old fuddy-duddy advisor that might be listening to this?
Spice it up. Don't be afraid to spice it up. No, really. I think one of the biggest things that the more mature advisors are failing in if they want to bring millennials on is following the stereotypes. At the end of the day, this is another person across from you. So think of it as, a regular client, just like, the clients that you serve that may be of a more mature market, and say, how can I provide the best service to them? If you keep thinking about how I can provide the best service to, this market that you're looking for, I think ideas will start to come to you on ways that are authentic to you to be able to actually serve this market. Don't think of us as those millennials that I read about or, like we're not a white paper. We're people. Mm-hmm. And if you think of us as people, you'll come up with great ideas in order to be able to serve us as people.
Fantastic. Well, Lauren, thank you very, very much for being our guest today.
It is so good to be on. Thank you for having me.
And this was podcast number 40, where we were talking to Lauren Williams, 4-time Olympian and 3-time Olympic medal winner and founder of Worth Winning. If you truly want to see what a great brand looks like, go to Lauren's website, which is worth-winning.com. We'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.